We would like to welcome you to the July 12th, 2023 meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes and new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for a decision. At this time, please make sure that your cell phones are muted. And if you're joining us virtually, please make sure you're muted on there as well so that we can hear everybody and have a clear record. Sign postings. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Okay. Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. This month, we have two items on the consent agenda, the petition of Ethos Preservation 23-003185-COA, 705 Barnard Street Rehabilitation and Alterations, and the petition of Architecture 101 23-003219-COA, 431 Habersham Street Addition and Alterations. Is there any member of the public or any board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Okay. Hearing none, is there a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
So moved.
Thank you, Mr.
Second.
Hull. And thank you, Ms. Gwen. We have a motion on the floor made by Mr. Hull and seconded by Ms. Gwen. We'll do a voice vote for this. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. With that, the items on the consent agenda have been approved. The adoption of the agenda for this meeting, July 12th, is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Gwen, so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Gwen. Is there a second?
Rowan, second.
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Again, we'll do a voice vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The approval of last month, June 14th's meeting, have been attached to the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the last month's meeting minutes?
Thompson, motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Is there a second? Thank you, Ms. Rowan. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Next we'll go on to items to be removed from the final agenda. There is none, so we will go on to the continued agenda. These applications have been requested to be continued to the following meeting. There are three. The petition of Ethos Preservation 23-003215-COA, 603 Whitaker Street Amendment/Rehabilitation, the petition of Homeline Architecture 23-002540-COA, 433 Tattnall Street Additions and Alterations, and lastly, the petition of Hanson Architects 23-002535-COA, 127 East Gordon Street Additions and Alterations. Is there a motion to continue the items on the continued agenda?
Gwen, so moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Request for extension. There are none on the agenda this month, so we will move on to the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and address items only identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by the board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to those public comments. The board will then go into board discussion, at which no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comment if you do not have any. If you're joining us virtually for the first time, please make sure that you locate your control panel, and use the raise your hand feature, and I'll be notified and call on you by name. The first item on the regular agenda is the petition of Signs by James LLC, James Burnshead, 23-0030737-COA107 West Congress Street, illuminated sign.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the request for 107 West Congress Street. The applicant is requesting approval to install a new illuminated sign for the business located at 107 West Congress Street, which is a non-contributing building. Staff found that the sign material and texture were visually compatible. However, the color scheme is not visually compatible with the contributing buildings or signs. Staff recommends revising the color scheme to be more aligned with the surrounding buildings and signage. Illuminated signs are permitted, but staff recommends that to be more aligned with the ordinance to redesign the sign to have reverse silhouette letters to reduce the glare of the backlighting. Staff has since spoken with the applicant, who is amenable to these changes. With regard to the allowable square footage, projecting signs can be up to 30 square feet in zoning DCBD, and the proposed sign is 16 square feet. It will be 12 feet from the bottom of the sign to the sidewalk. So with that, staff recommends to approve the request to install an illuminated sign at 107 West Congress Street with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for review and approval prior to starting the work, because the project is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, revise the color scheme to be more visually compatible with the surrounding area. And two, revise the design to include individually illuminated letters with an opaque background. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions for staff? No? Thank you. Would the petitioner like to come forward and state your name for the record? Is he here? Okay. Yes, not. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Are you sure? Okay. I would say, is Artist not on there? Because she said that she was going to join. Artist would. But she hasn't used the... Should I call on her anyway? Because we knew that she wanted to talk. Okay. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Make sure you use the raise your hand feature if you're joining us virtually. No?
Nope.
Okay.
All right.
You want to? Okay. Come on.
Hi.
Make sure you state your name for the record.
My name is Andrew Berrien Jones with the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition, and I support the staff's recommendations. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Well, then at this time, we'll go into board discussion, and no further public comment will be taken. Ms. Gwen, I'll start with you.
No comments.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Mr. Hull?
Nothing. To add?
Ms. Rowan?
I support staff's recommendation.
And Mr. Thompson?
Actually, I don't agree with staff's recommendation. I believe the board should continue this item until we get the applicant here in front of us and respond to any questions or comments we have, or to amend the request and resubmit it based on staff's recommendation.
Okay. We'll go around one more time since Mr. Thompson had something to say. Ms. Gwynn?
Nothing further.
Mr. Higgins?
I actually agree with Mr. Thompson.
Okay. Mr. Hull?
Well, I think you have another agreement for continuance.
Okay. Ms. Rowan? And Mr. Thompson?
I agree with myself.
Okay. All right. Well, then at this time, we will now entertain a motion.
Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review continue the petition 23003037COA at 107 West Congress Street, so that the petitioner can be here to answer questions.
Okay. Do we have a second? Okay.
Second.
Okay. The motion on the floor is to continue the application. Ms. Gwen, how do you vote?
Yay.
Oh, do we have to be specific with a date for continuing it? Okay. When would you like?
I would amend that to the next meeting, which is July the...
August.
August 9th.
August 9th. Okay. So the petition on the floor is to currently continue the application to the August 9th meeting, seconded by Mr. Thompson. Ms. Gwynn, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
And Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Okay. With that, the application has been continued. The next item on the agenda is the petition of Rose Architects 23-002530-COA. 301 Alice Street, New Construction, Part 1, Height and Mass. And I am recusing myself.
Thank you. This is Leah Mahalik. I am going to start by passing the revised model. The applicant is requesting approval for new construction, Part 1, Height and Mass, for a single-family residence with a four-car carriage house for the property located at 301 Alice Street. Per the applicant, the changes since the last meeting include the following. One, change the proportions of the windows to make them more vertical in nature. Two, change the vertical brick surrounds from stack bond to stack header bond, which helps emphasize the verticality of the windows. Three, remove the pilasters, creating a more cohesive facade. Four, change the entrance roof at the roof level and first floor, emphasizing more simplicity and further delineating the two masses. Five, created more transparency in the entrance vestibule, further developed the cornice, dimensioned the curb cuts, added brick detailing, reworked the brick and proportions of the east wall, and changed the height of the roof over the courtyard and simplified the garden wall. On June 14th, the HGBR approved to demolish the existing building and continued the new construction, Part 1, Height and Mass. Specifically, it was stated to further examine the context. With regard to visual compatibility, although atypically wide for a single-family residence, the mass is broken into two distinct masses along Alice Street, making it more compatible with the widths of contributing buildings. Although a central entrance is atypical, this design with a double door in the center appears as two entrances in the center with a mass on either side, similar to a side hallway plan duplex. With regard to design standards, just a couple of basic comments: that door frame shall be inset not less than 3 inches. And we need to clarify this garage apron, because the ordinance says that you can't apron on the public right of way, and it looks like it might be showing that. Staff is recommending approval with the following conditions to be submitted with Part 2 design details because the proposed work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, door frame shall be inset not less than 3 inches, and driveway aprons shall not be erected on the public right of way. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for staff? Okay.
Thank you.
Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Yes, hello. My name is Kevin Rose with Rose Architects. I guess I agree with everything the staff has to say. The last time I started out talking about the project and how height and mass has kind of a bleed with part two. So part one and part two tends to go back and forth. We took everything that the board and the public said at the last meeting to heart and studied the elevations and the proportions and did a little tweaking to make things, more in keeping with the neighborhood patterns. We're still in that process for part two. It's not complete, so we're open to comments as well. It's obvious that we're doing a building of this century that's respectful of the neighbors. We're not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes here. The neighborhood is all over the map as far as good, bad, ugly, beautiful, sublime. We're trying to just make a building that's respectful of the good buildings in the neighborhood. So I prefer to turn it over to any kind of questions that y'all have. I don't really have much else to say other than, we're looking forward to building this and we thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Are there any questions for the applicant?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins.
First of all, I think the changes you've made have been very, very good, very appreciated. The only comment I have, which is more of a design point, is if this was on a more traditional street, I'd hesitate to have the entrances to the carriage house on a North South Street. And it also leaves a sort of a blank facade on the rear of the carriage house. Something to think about.
It is. We have a lot of garage doors on the back. So we can take a look at the entrance, trying to work the proper location for the trash and all that stuff is kind of a trick on this one. But we can take a look at that. We'd spent a lot more of our time on the main house in that week that we had to turn around the design. And we're going to have another week to tweak a lot of things. I'm still not happy with the porch and how it interacts with the house. I'd like to see a little more traditional connection there. But that's part two. Those are details. So we look forward to, the next go around and showing you the other tweaks that we're going to make.
Are there any other questions for the applicant? Thank you. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Please state your name for the record and keep your comments to 3 minutes or less.
Hello, my name is Andrew Berrien Jones. I'm chairman of the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition, a 501c3 dedicated to preserving the downtown National Historic Landmark District. The revised proposal offers minimal adjustments, but still does not meet the standards. Regarding the visual compatibility criteria, the entrance cavity is not visually compatible with any building to which it is visually related, which are the buildings that are within view of the subject property. The entrance portion of the building is a rectangular recess with three walls of metal and glass that span two entire stories. The rhythms and proportions and materials of this section of the building are simply not compatible with any structure in the vicinity. This is not the equivalent of a dark space between two buildings, the idea two buildings with the masses separated by a passageway, which was the justification for this recessed area, but rather it is a two-story tube of light which will be backlit from the interior lighting. And imagine the look at night. For this reason alone, you should continue this application and request that the architect revise the design. Also concerning is that the upward sloping cornice is not visually compatible. Eaves typically descend outward from the building face to prevent rain from running back onto the building wall. This reversal of the slope is jarring and, again, is not compatible with any of the buildings to which this visually relates. Regarding the design standard, section 7810H2A9 requires that the space between the windows be no larger than that for visually related buildings unless otherwise visually compatible. The space between the windows in this proposal measure as much as 6'9" wide. So an arm span is 6 feet. So it's even wider than this. which certainly appears larger than the space between the windows of visually related buildings, and this feature contributes to the squat and bulky appearance of this design. A typical building of this frontage would have more windows, each more vertical in proportion, spaced more closely together, as shown in the presentation I delivered last month, and nowhere has the architect shown how this design is compatible with the visually related buildings. And Lee, if I can give you, this is last month's presentation, if you could just give that to the board to remind them. So we demonstrated last month that the appropriate approach is not embodied by this proposal, and that presentation includes many images of buildings in Berry and Ward. This project needs a redesign in order to comply with the ordinance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there another member of the public that would like to comment? No one virtually? Okay. We will now enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be made or accepted. I'll start with you, Mr. Higgins.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Does the applicant get a chance to comment on public comment?
Yes. Sorry. Would the applicant like to address public comment?
One, we meet the ordinance. The staff has said that. The rest gets into whether we like it or we don't like it. And our client likes it. Our client, we did study doing more windows in this building, and most of the windows had walls in the middle of them. So to do that type of proportion here wouldn't work. We did look at it. It's, you know, we kept an open mind. We went back to the drawing board. This is how this building works. I encourage anyone that has strong opinions to get into architecture, because it's not just about making a pretty face. It's about making a holistic building. And that's what's so gorgeous about our historic properties here. They're simple, and they're simple, and they're gorgeous. Our, you know, Victorian, we're not talking about Victorian neighborhoods, we're talking about downtown. And I've lived here since 1986. I fell in love with it, and my response is, this is a building that's going to be here for a long time, and we want it to be the best it can be as this building, not as a copy of one down the street or somewhere else. So that's all.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Any further questions for our applicant? Okay. We will now enter into board discussion. I will start with you, Mr. Higgins.
I just want to say I appreciate the design of this. It's very innovative. I feel it fits within the context. I very much appreciate it being broken into basically two structures, or something that appears as two structures, as opposed to one broad squat block. And I support it.
Mr. Hull?
I would agree that the concept that I see of the two-story entranceway breaks the building up and makes it less of makes it look less than like a school building. So just a comment.
Ms. Rowan?
I agree with Mr. Higgins' comments.
Mr. Thompson?
Well, I just on the design, I'm trying to think, is this called contemporary modern? Or how would you describe that? May I ask the applicant just to give me the right term? Thank you. I just want to clarify in my mind what you would call it as an architect.
I'd prefer to call it respectful of the neighborhood and it's of its time. I wouldn't give it a name or a brand.
Yeah, of its time was more what I was looking for. Thank you. When I first looked at this stretch and looked at the adjacent buildings, I said, that should be together. But as I thought about it more, I mean, we need more of its time buildings as we fill in so that there's a, over time, this 50 years from now, this will be considered historic and not torn down because it looks different, I think. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. We'll go around one more time. Mr. Higgins?
No additional comment.
Mr. Hull?
No.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
Well, thanks. I'm done.
Okay, thank you. At this time, we'll entertain a motion.
Higgins, I move the Historic District Board of Review with regard to 301 Alice Street, which is 23-002530-COA. Approve the staff recommendations with the 2 points made.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Rowan, second. Oh, sorry. Hull, second. We have a motion to approve with staff recommendations from Mr. Higgins and a second from Mr. Hull. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Yes.
Ms. Rowan?
Yes.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Yes.
Motion carries. Take a brief pause to welcome our chairwoman back.
Go ahead. Right. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the application for 110 West Taylor Street. The applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitation at 110 West Taylor. The project includes undoing alterations from the 1970s and 80s, such as the front stoop, replacement of non-historic windows, and reopening a historic door. The project also includes adding a roof to the existing deck on the rear elevation. 110 West Taylor Street was built circa 1850 and is listed as a contributing resource. It's in the middle of 3 two-story wood frame row houses with raised basements. This house has undergone various alterations as seen on the Sanborn maps of 1888, where they may be in their earliest configuration in 1898, which shows the addition of the front stoops. And 1916, which includes a two-story porch addition on the front and rear addition, and a rear addition at 110 and 112, which according to permit records was applied for in 1914. More recently, in the 1970s and 80s, there were more changes. In 1975, the two-story front porch was removed and restored to a configuration similar to what was on the 1898 Sanborn Fire Insurance Map. There were also changes on the rear elevation to the windows and doors. The applicant's research shows that in 2003, a general maintenance permit was also pulled. So just for some context of the street view, show these here, the front and the rear. And then here are the existing elevations. And the proposed elevations. Overall, staff finds that this project is visually compatible and meets the standards as it aims to return the historic character to the building that was lost in the alterations. With regard to the drawing, staff is requesting further information about the roof over the deck at the rear elevation and to include more column details at both the front and the rear elevations. So with that, the staff recommends to approve the request for rehabilitation and alterations at 110 West Taylor Street with the following conditions for staff review and approval prior to starting the project because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. 1, ensure that the columns have bases and that the details are reflected on the drawings. And 2, provide further information about the roof over the deck at the rear elevation. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Does anybody have any questions for staff? No? Okay. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hello again, Kevin Rose. Thank you once again, board, chairman. We agree with the staff recommendations right off the bat. I wanted to give a little context to the sketch that we saw in this, I'm trying to remember which direction it's at, but the other one,
It's the tab over right here.
It's in the research. My original mentor in 1987 in architecture did the sketch right here. Y'all see that? Juan Bertotto. So it's going to be nice to put kind of something there that Juan drew in 1974 and the cheap developer didn't build properly. So we're looking forward to doing that. It's been kind of emotional looking at all these drawings, and I just want to speak to that, and that also answers a little bit of the questions. We've already started the detailing of the porch. With these rehab projects, we're not required under the checklist to have details, but we're going to add to that detail for the staff to make sure that the bases are shown properly and the proportions are good at the cornice and at the upper level of the stoop. My client would like to add the door back over, which I think will help with that front facade and not having that blank spot on the right-hand side. The good news is the building next door is going to do the same thing. So ironically, or not really ironically, but at one point, the two westernmost buildings, the center and western building, matched, and the one to the east didn't. So we're going to actually see that again at some point. We're looking forward to it. And as far as the back porch is concerned, once we get the structural information, we're going to detail that properly. There's a lot of structural issues with this building that we're taking care of first. There's probably a 4 to 6 inch bow in the parlor floor. So we'll get that out, get the building stabilized, and then we'll submit to staff for the 2 points that they had brought up. Are there any questions?
Does anybody have any questions for Kevin? Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Anybody virtually? Okie dokie. Well, then we will go into board discussion. At this time, no further public comment will be accepted. Mr. Thompson, I'll start with you.
I don't have any comments.
Okay. Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Mr. Hull?
No comments.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
And Ms. Gwynn?
No comments.
Okay. Since nobody really had any comments, we will now entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 230032 08 COA at 110 West Taylor Street with the conditions as stated in the staff recommendation.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Okay. At this time, the motion on the floor is to approve with conditions. And seconded by Ms. Rowan. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
And Ms. Gwynn?
Aye.
Okay. With that, the petition has been approved with conditions as outlined in the staff recommendation. Next item on the regular agenda is the petition of Duren Homeowners Association 23-003212-COA 24 East Liberty Street Rehabilitation.
Sorry about that. Hang on 1 second. All right, this is Leah again. The applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitation of the property located at 24 East Liberty Street, known as the Duren Apartments. The scope of work includes brick cleaning and repointing, brick lintel repairs and replacement, stone cleaning and repairs, balcony railing repairs and repainting, terracotta tile repair at the cornice, and window repairs. Per the applicant, quote, the goal is to stabilize and refurbish the exterior. A mock-up of all work proposed for the rehabilitation prior to full execution of the work will be located on the west facade of the building. They provided this exhibit. And then this drawing, which is helpful, it points to each area of work. So Signed by architect Henrik Wallin, the Durant Apartments were constructed in 1924 and is considered the first high-rise apartment building in Savannah. It's remained in continuous residential use. The ground floor is faced with granite, the upper floors with red brick, and the frieze with glazed tile. Regarding preservation brief two, repointing mortar joints and historic masonry, applicant proposes type N mortar. However, we're asking to ensure that the color, texture, and tooling also match the historic mortar when they make the mock-up. To coordinate with staff to review that mock-up on the west facade prior to full execution of the work. Here is a list of the materials proposed. An example is the Prosoco EnviroClean for cleaning at the soiled area of the brick precast. Staff finds that all cleaning and repair materials are appropriate and visually compatible. With regard to the Secretary of the Interior standards, all deteriorated features are proposed to be repaired where possible. Where bricks need to be replaced, where they can't be repaired, the proposed brick matches the old in design, color, texture, and materials. We are asking to clarify what method will be used to clean the brick and the precast using the gentlest means possible. Staff is recommending approval with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for final review and approval because the proposed work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, the new mortar, color, texture, and tooling must match the historic mortar. Two, coordinate with staff to review the mock-up on the west facade prior to full execution of the work. And three, clarify what method will be used to clean the brick and the precast. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Leah? Okay. Thank you, Leah.
Thank you.
Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. Ellen Harris with Ethos Preservation, representing the Durin Homeowners Association. We agree with all of staff's conditions and are happy to oblige, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Harris? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Anybody virtually? Okay. Okay. At this time, we will now go into enter into board discussion, and no further public comment will be accepted. Ms. Gwynn, I'll start with you.
No comments.
Mr. Higgins.
No comment.
Mr. Hull.
No comment.
Ms. Rowan.
No comment.
And Mr. Thompson.
I just want to comment that it's great that the Homeowners Association have taken this initiative to keep this building well in good condition and restore it for the future. I don't never seen the inside, but the location and the prominence of the building for years and years, it's an important building.
Agreed. Okay. Since nobody really had anything to say the first time around, we will now entertain a motion.
Rowan, I move that the Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 23003212COA, provide that the conditions outlined in staff recommendations are met.
Okay, do we have a second?
Higgins, second.
Okay, current motion on the floor is to approve with conditions as outlined in the staff recommendation. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
And Ms. Gwynn?
Aye.
Okay. With that, it has been approved with conditions. Next item on the regular agenda is the petition of Pantheon ADC 23-003216-COA, 200 West Bryan Street, amendment/new construction.
Thank you. It's Leah again. The applicant is requesting approval to amend a previously approved certificate of appropriateness for a six-story building at 200 West Bryan Street. The amendments include the following. sixth floor has been expanded to enclose the formerly open roof area on the north side of the building at the lane. The language is consistent with the east elevation. The curtain wall is extended to the roof. So this is previously approved, and this is proposed. The banding between the fourth and fifth floors has been removed, previous and proposed. And the banding has changed the windows. Now the windows mimic the ones below it here. With regard to visual compatibility, height, and scale of a building, staff finds the change in height and scale of the building with the additional enclosed sixth floor space visually compatible. The enclosed space continues the language of the remainder of the six-story portions of the building. Staff finds the windows revised on the south facade to match the east facade visually compatible. With regard to design standards, the building, although the banding has been removed, so this is where the banding was here, is still divided into base, middle, top. The top story is set back and has a different fenestration pattern than the rest of the building, which is back here, which makes it distinctive from the stories below. Staff is recommending approval as requested because the proposed changes are visually compatible and meets the standards. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Leah? Okay, thank you. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
James Glucci, Pantheon ADC. Thank you to the board and to staff for the review. We agree with staff and their comments. Just to give a little bit more background information on the change, the programmatic needs of the building have required us to look at that sixth floor and enclosing it. We chose to enclose the north side of the building and leave the south side of the building closest to Ellis Square unchanged for massing and the height. So the mass and the height of the building haven't changed in regards to that south elevation. The banding change, we feel, actually helps make the building more holistic. All the elevations now share sill heights and banding detailing. So that's just a little bit more information. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner? Go ahead.
Could you expand just a little bit? You said there were some programmatic changes that required the infill. Could you provide a little bit more there? Thanks.
Sure, absolutely. This project has a relatively long lifespan in terms of conceptual to where we are today. We're actually under construction currently at Ellis Square. Late in the design process, we had hotel branding come in as part of this. As part of that hotel branding, there are certain requirements that they need to make that project a success for them. So the restaurant space on the top floor required a little bit more enclosed space and for event space and things like that to meet branding requirements. So that's when we started looking at where we can accommodate that programmatic need.
Any other questions for the petitioner? No? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment on this project? Anybody virtual? And y'all are making this easy today. Okay. At this time, we'll now enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Ms. Gwen, I will start with you.
No comment.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Mr. Houle?
No comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
And Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Okay. Since nobody had anything to say the first time around, we will now entertain a motion.
Higgins?
Mm-hmm.
Move the Savannah Downtown District Board of Review with regard to 23-003216-COA, approve to amend a previously approved certificate of purpose for the new building at 200 East Bryan Street.
Okay. Petition on the floor is to approve as submitted. Do we have a second?
Rowan, second.
Okay. Ms. Gwen, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
And Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Okay, that the petition has been approved as submitted. The next item on the regular agenda is the petition of J. Elder Studio 23-003222-COA 408 MLK Jr. Boulevard Amendment / Rooftop Addition.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's Leah one more time today. The applicant is requesting approval for amendments to a previously approved COA for a rooftop addition for the property located at 408 MLK. The amendment expands the size of the rooftop addition, the depth of the front setback is decreased, and in the rear, an additional protection is proposed. So the hatched area is the previous rooftop addition. The rooftop addition is visible from the I-16 flyover. However, it's only minimally visible from the front facade. I'm going to show a series of renderings. So this is the front facade where you can't see it at all. It is highly visible from the I-16 flyover, which hopefully someday will be gone. Some more renderings of the rear. More renderings of the front looking south, looking north, and then from the end market across the street. You can see how minimally to not visible it is. The historic building was constructed in 1906 and is contributing. And in October, you all approved the rooftop addition and storefront alterations. With regard to preservation brief 14 for new exterior additions to historic buildings, the form of the building as visible from the front facade is not altered. All visible historic materials and features are preserved. The addition is compatible but differentiated from the historic building. The addition is one story plus a mezzanine and is set back from the primary elevation. The building is not freestanding or other than the front facade, highly visible. The addition does not constitute an entire floor and it's set back from the front facade. It does not affect the building's proportions and profile from the front. Staff is recommending approval. The proposed scope of work is only visible again from the I-16 flyover and not from MLK. The historic character of the structure is not altered as the characteristic features, materials, and spaces of the structure will not be impacted by the addition. The proposed scope of work does not obscure distinctive features, and the building form and cornice, which are major distinctive features of the structures, are not obscured. With regard to design standards, we have only one condition, one standard that's not being met, I should say. And that's that the ordinance requires shed roof slopes to be pitched between 2 and 6. And they have this one slope is a 112 slope. So that would need to be changed to a minimum of 212. Staff is recommending approval with the following condition to be submitted to staff for review and approval because the proposed work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. Revise the 112 roof pitch to meet the standard, which is a minimum of 212. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Leah? Other than what we already talked about? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Jerome Elder, J. Elder Studio. I'd like to thank staff for working with us as we were making these slight modifications to the previous COA. We agree with the staff comments and we can get that top pitch roof adjusted. Outside of that, if you have any questions, please feel free.
Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Anybody virtually? Okay. All right. At this time, we'll now enter into board discussion. Mr. Thompson, I'll start with you. Oh, sorry. I didn't realize you had it. Sorry.
I think the project's fine. No other comment.
Okay. Mr. Rowan?
No comment.
Mr. Hool?
I don't have any problems with this.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
And Ms. Gwen?
No comment.
Okay. At this time, we will now entertain a motion.
Sorry, Ms. Gwen, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition number 23-003222-COA for 408 Martin Luther King Boulevard as requested because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Okay. Current petition is to approve with the single condition as outlined in the staff report. Ms. Gwen, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Hool?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
And Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
That the petition has been approved with the single condition. The next item on the regular agenda is the petition of Shed Architecture, Shedrick Coleman, 23-003202-COA, 412 to 414, Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard demolition.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain. The applicant is requesting approval to demolish the non-contributing buildings at 412 and 414 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. The dates of construction of 412 and 414 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard are unknown, but it is believed that 412 was built in the early 1900s and 414 as it exists today was originally four wood frame townhouses seen first on the 1898 Sanborn map. Get back to that. Both buildings are listed as non-contributing resources within the National Historic Landmark District. The Sanborn Fire Insurance map from 1888 shows two attached one-story frame dwellings at the site of 414 and a two-story wood frame dwelling at the approximate site of 412. By 1898, 412 West Broad Street is still a two-story wood frame dwelling, but with some alterations at the rear. 414 West Broad Street is not shown as an address, but there are four attached two-story wood-frame dwellings on Tatnall Street and heading towards the corner of West Broad Street. Photographs from the 1940s show what looks like this configuration was still there but adapted into a commercial building on the street level. Jump ahead to that. The Savannah Ward Notebook for the Berrien Ward has a note to omit both 412 and 414 West Broad Street, but a reason is not given. Neither page includes much detail except to note that they have a vague construction date of 20th century. Based on photographs starting in the 1930s, it appears that the structure at 414 today is an alteration of the original structure. The storefront seen in historic photographs and the frieze above the storefront with the shop name appear to be the only surviving features still visible. 412 has undergone major renovations where it is nearly unrecognizable from the earlier photos. Unfortunately, there weren't a lot of head-on shots of this as there were with the other building, but you can see some of the differences of prior to what we're seeing today with the storefront and the double windows and the parapet. At some point between the 1953 and 1973 Sanborn maps, the two buildings were connected. It may have been around that time that the exterior of 414 was stuccoed and the bay windows removed from the former wood frame houses. The 1953 Sanborn map lists 414 as a paint store on the main elevation. The maps from 1953 and 73 show the same building. So in this case, the same building that is there currently was built within the period of significance, but it has undergone many changes on the front facade that occurred beyond 1960, rendering them unrecognizable from their earlier facades. So here are just some current photos of the exterior. and just from the outside and trying to get a few photos. So staff evaluated the criteria for relocation or demolition for non-contributing resource, which says any non-contributing resource must first be evaluated and considered for contributing status prior to issuance of a certificate of appropriateness for relocation or demolition. In order to be considered contributing, contributing buildings include those within the current period of significance, possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association, and meet one or more of the following criteria. The period of significance is 1733 to 1960. While there were early storefront alterations undertaken during that time, photographs after 1960 show still more changes took place at both addresses. Photographs from the 1940s show how the four townhouses at the current 414 were initially incorporated into the storefront, and it is possible that some of the fabric of these earlier buildings still exists beneath the stucco at the storefront, but there's little on the exterior to indicate that. Another criteria associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad pattern of our history and are associated with the lives of significant persons in our past. This is undetermined fully, but the fact that the B&B company was in business over a period of time in Savannah as a pawn shop, loan shop, and later a paint shop does have local significance. To embody the distinctive characteristics of a type period or method of construction, or that represent the work of a master, or that possess high artistic values, or that represent a significant and distinguishable entity whose components may lack individual distinction. The distinctive characteristics of both buildings have largely been lost. The remaining characteristics from the period of significance that can still be seen are within the storefront on 414 MLK Boulevard. These are seen in the photos from the 1940s. I can go back to some of those. The historic fabric of the original four townhouses may still exist beneath the stucco exterior, but this has been erased on the exterior. Have yielded or may be likely to yield information important in history or prehistory. There's the potential and the history about urban renewal and its aftermath, as well as the history of a long-running local business. The criteria of exceptional importance says contributing buildings include a select group of exceptional resources constructed outside of the district's period of significance. These resources possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association, and meet one or more of the above criteria. The historic integrity of the buildings has been lost due to multiple alterations that they have undergone. The integrity of the location was compromised when the portion of Tatnall Street was demolished for the I-16 flyover. The design, setting, materials, and workmanship of the original buildings has been lost except for what is seen in photographs. And the buildings are unlikely to qualify for contributing status. So with that, if the buildings for the demolition criteria, in the case of the demolition of contributing principal building, a certificate of appropriateness must first be issued for the new construction, which the standard does not apply. So staff recommends to approve the request for demolition of the non-contributing buildings located at 412, 414 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard with the following conditions, because the criteria for non-contributing demolition have otherwise been met. One, the buildings must be documented per the MPC policy for documenting buildings. Two, rather than traditional demolition, the buildings be deconstructed and the materials salvaged for reuse.
Does anybody have any questions for Caitlin?
I do.
Go ahead.
Was staff able to examine the buildings or go inside to look at the interior of either of the structures?
Aside from the exterior observation, looking inward, that was it.
And was a structural assessment done or provided to staff?
Not provided to staff, but perhaps the applicant may be able to better answer if there was. And they do have a presentation.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions for staff?
Yes. Can you tell me in general, what staff discussions there were, may back up. One of the criteria is, are associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history. What research or discussions has staff had with this regard as to the civil rights movement or the African-American business corridor of West Broad Street?
So it would be remiss to say that there is, that is not part of this history. And that is definitely something that research was done. In a perfect world, there would be unlimited time to do further research into these with time constraints. The research onto the historic buildings was done to an extent. Sure, there could have been more done. But, you know, it is noted in this report, you know, we did mention the urban renewal, the aftermath, and so forth. There's certainly more to be discovered there, though.
Any additional questions? Go ahead, Tom.
Caitlin, the number two, rather than traditional demolition, the building be deconstructed, material salvage. Is there a guideline for that? What materials? I mean,
currently is not.
Not yet.
Yet.
What looks like good stuff can be saved when the rest of it gets. All right. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. Shedrick Coleman, Shed Architecture, here to speak on behalf of my client on this project. First off, I will say that my client purchased this building, and we have spent over 3 years analyzing the structure and the interiors of the structure to see if this building could be saved, including doing a very thorough interior scanning of the building to find out exactly what the structure was, bringing in my structural engineer to analyze the building, see if we could save it. My client initially wanted to maintain this building and to reuse it as is, and in those investigations of the structure and what it would take to save the building, determined that it was a total structural rebuild to save this building. And I do have photos of the interior that I will show you that show what's happening on the ground floor, especially that holds up the building after the townhouses were pulled out. The second floor, which is where the townhouses were at one time, has been totally pulled out, where there's no semblance of what that townhouse structure was upstairs on the upper floor. It was used for storage, for paint. So they basically took out most of the walls that were a part of that. But what we have found is that there are moldings in the walls that have been left. There are moldings, floor materials, and other things that we feel are very valuable. And that was a part of why my client want to deconstruct the building instead of simply demolish it, because the value of what is there, we feel, has an ongoing value moving forward, and we want to make sure that the building is repurposed in a way where as much of the materials as possible are being reused after the demolition of the building. Going to, I guess, what we have here. I'd like to show some of the interior photos. Of what the interior of the building looks like. These are photos of the ground floor and the columns that are there and how these columns are being supported by numerous pieces of blocking. The roof structure is a truss that's built up under an existing wood floor that has numerous places where it is sagged, and we have pieces where these members are what's holding up the structure. There's a location where a beam is holding up a single beam has cut the trusses and is holding up the rest of the floor. And on the upper floor, it's dropped about a foot and a half down in the floor underneath that. And it's being supported by these members, which is under that area. So structurally, the building's very unstable from the standpoint of starting to try and take anything out. My structural engineer determined that you'd have to really pull all of this stuff out of here and
and shore up the wall to try and safely remove any of these materials. So even in the process of deconstruction, it will be a very careful process because the building was ad hoc built. I mean, everything that was done was constructed and added in a manner that was not structurally worked out. So you have a number of items that are just held up just by grace right now from the standpoint, this is the area where that beam has cut the trusses, and this is what's holding the floor up above where it's dropped. So we have done a lot of analysis of the building, and the first drawing I had was a drawing of that structural system to show the complexity of what's happening here, where we have, you know, this is the upper floor, but we have a roof system and all these floor trusses that are all moving along and being supported. And there's just really no way to safely get into that and engineer a very safe structure without rebuilding the entire thing. And that was one of the items that we felt started pulling the cost up. And we ended up doing a structural design and having it priced by a contractor just to make sure that we were able to get a number that was pulled back to my client. And the cost was very prohibitive to get simply a vanilla box for the ground floor for a restaurant with no renovation of the upper floor at that point was close to $1 million just to do that level of reconstruction at the building before you did anything else, including any exterior renovations. So the cost became very prohibitive for my client.
Who is your structural engineer?
My structural engineer is Saucy Engineering.
Saucy?
Yes.
And he completed a whole assessment report for you?
He did a structural design for me, and we have a report from him, and we have a report from we have an original report from what's the other structural engineer we had, which is we had an earlier structural report as well before I actually had the building scan that from another structural engineer.
He gave the structural.
Can you come up to the? I need you to come up to the mic.
Come up.
I'm Stephen Friedman. I'm the building owner. And we do have another structural report. Whoever asked, you asked the question. We do have a precursor structural report that we did provide to staff, and both structural engineers concurred that there was no salvaging, no saving the building. But, you know, what I would say, just as a brief comment, I said I wasn't going to talk.
Absolutely. Come to the mic.
You know, you have a wonderful organization.
Can you go up to the mic?
I'm sorry.
We can't hear you.
I'm sorry. You have a wonderful organization here in Savannah that I learned about only a number of months ago called Repurpose Savannah.
Yeah.
I assume
we're familiar.
This business,
yeah.
You're really right. So I met with those folks and they came in and walked through the building, and the historical Savannah people came in and walked through the building. And, you know, everybody got why it was unfortunate that the building can't be saved. I wanted to save it. That was my preference. And then I met the folks from Repurpose Savannah, and the beauty of, from my perspective, we will be, while the building can't be saved, there are some amazing materials inside of the building that won't, you know, that we will be able to save and that we'll be able to sort of live on in the community. So, yeah, sorry.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any questions for the petitioner?
I do.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. Ms. Gwen, I'll start with you because we'll move that way.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that a structural assessment has been done. Has that report been made available to staff?
Yes, it was.
Both of them?
The first one we provide to staff.
Yeah, it was Tharp.
Oh, Tharp?
Yes, Tharp. Yes. Tharp did the first one.
Okay, there seems to be a little confusion. A structural report wasn't shared with us as board members as part of the submittal, so we haven't had a chance to review that. Is that something that you would be willing to share if
my client
has not?
Would be willing to share it. The reason why we didn't push that is because for a non-contributing building, it was not a requirement under the process that we went through. So we do have that information, but it was not a requirement for the process. It's why it really didn't get pushed into the application.
Sure, understood. But if requested, you would be willing to provide?
I do believe that we've said yes, we would do that.
And then it looks like a lot of the assessment and the discussion has been on the 414 building, and I had some questions about 412. Was the same structural assessment done on that property?
No, it was not. 412 is basically an open bay, 24-foot wide building that there's really nothing structurally wrong with that building. It's just basically open floors on all the way through. So we did not do a structural analysis of that building. We looked at the fact that it's been substantially altered to where there's just no exterior. The exterior has been substantially altered, but the interior is basically open floors on all three floors.
Sure. I guess my question is driven because there's evidence throughout the historic district where buildings and facades have been stuccoed over, and there are historic facades underneath, and I was just curious if that had been investigated.
On 414, we know that the structure and what's behind it is not historic at all. And when I went on the inside and looked at the 412 to see whether there were signs of the original window openings in there, that's all been totally reworked to these steel casements that are in there. So they've totally revised that front elevation, and the rear is totally blocked over. So we couldn't see anything there that remained.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Higgins.
She basically got exactly what I was going to ask.
Okay. Mr. Hull, you good? Anybody else have any additional questions, comments, concerns for the petitioner?
Do.
Go ahead.
Sure. There seems to be some communication gap between having the former engineering report given to staff, and staff apparently doesn't have it. Can, I don't know if it's you or staff should explain that. I see.
He already did.
Pardon?
He already did explain that.
I didn't hear it, I guess.
Yes, that we had the written report, and we didn't push that into the application because the structural analysis was not a requirement of the application for a non-contributing building. But we do have that information. But that's why it wasn't, the staff was told we had that information, but we did not make it a part of the application.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Excuse me.
That report was provided to staff. By me. So there's no question that staff had the report.
Well, that's fine. Anybody have any other questions for the petitioner? Okay. Thank you. At this time, would any members of the public like to comment? Make sure you state your name for the record.
My name is Ryan Jarles, Director of Preservation with Historic Savannah Foundation. As you heard from the petitioner, we did meet with him on site, and we did walk through the entirety of both of the buildings. So I just wanted to state that before we move on. The petition before you is truly an interesting and special building. I think all of us know B&B Paint. And it is unfortunate that over the years and years and years of odd and differing alterations, it has become to a point of a structurally unsafe building. I have seen those structural reports. He did share them with me. And they do confirm it's pretty much a loss. As he stated, the exterior of B&B, what's underneath that layer is just the inside of the building. So the historic exterior is no longer there. HSF is understanding of these special circumstances behind the choice the petitioner has made to apply for this demolition. I'll put demolition in quotation marks because he is willing to go through that additional step of accepting the process of a deconstruction. And we are understandable of that option due to the structural integrity. At least on the outward-facing facades, it is its historic integrity is just not there fully. So although we are unable to outright support a demolition, that's not really what we're here to do these days, we do understand the circumstances. And if you are all to approve this demolition, we are at least understanding and accepting of the fact that it will at least be deconstructed and those items be reutilized, whether it be on this site or another one, and that we will work with the petitioner either way this goes on moving forward with this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Charles. Is there another member of the public that would like to comment? Anybody virtually? Okay. At this time, we will now enter into board discussion, and no further public comments will be accepted. I'll start with you, Ms. Quinn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have concerns, I think, as we all do whenever looking at a demolition within our historic district, to make sure that we exhaust all possible resources to make sure that we're not losing any historic buildings or character, contributing or non-contributing. And for me personally, I, having not been able to review a structural report and having none been given to the building at 412, I just don't feel like I have enough information to vote on this today.
Agreed. Mr. Higgins.
I totally agree with what was just said. Right down to just now seeing some of the photographs of the interior and seeing the knob, the remains of the knob and tube wiring, mm-hmm. which, you know, dates.
It's okay.
Which, you know, will date it to turn of the century, if mm-hmm. not slightly earlier. In addition to that, I have perhaps a greater concern with the review of whether it's could be a contributing building. Especially the point are associated with events that have made significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history.
Agreed.
It has not been reviewed in the context of the Civil Rights Movement or the West Broad Street Business Corridor, which were incredibly significant and which were incredibly damaged by the I-16 flyover.
Yep.
I feel that this should be reviewed in those contexts for significance, because what little remains we should keep if there is significance.
Agreed. Mr. Hull.
Ditto.
Okay. Ms. Rowan.
I agree with all the previous comments, and I don't feel like I have enough information to make a decision today.
And Mr. Thompson.
Well, I think Ms. Gwynn's comment was what I would have, which is if there was a report on the condition of both buildings or one of them, we should have probably known that and seen it before we take action. So I guess I'd recommend a continuance to the August meeting.
Okay. We'll go around a second time. Ms. Gwynn, anything additional?
Sorry, one more thing. not for the petitioner, but just in instances like this, where we are recommending a deconstruction, mm-hmm. Not having criteria or guidelines or visibility of that process also makes me a little nervous. So I don't know if that's something we can work with staff.
That's actually something that is currently in the works by a member of our audience, from Repurpose Savannah and a committee of people. So that actually is that's in process currently. So
I'm glad you guys are so smart.
Yeah.
Nothing further.
Mr. Higgins.
No additional.
Mr. Hull.
I did want to add that it looks like that there's the, and I don't know what the street numbers are, but the, I'm going to call it the red brick building versus the whitewash building.
So 412.
That even if there are issues that can't be dealt with in the larger building, that the,
that 412.
That building. I don't see where there's the same serious issues. So mm-hmm. even if one is to be deconstructed, I can't see where the other one needs to be.
Okay. Ms. Roman.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I'm not understanding why that building needs to be demolished too. So.
Okay. Mr. Thompson, anything additional?
No, not additional.
Okay. At this time, we will now entertain a motion.
Higgins, I move the Savannah Downtown Board of Review with regard to 412 through 414 MLK, petition number 23-003202 COA. Continue this matter for no more than 90 days so that the petitioner can provide copies of all structural evaluations, photographs, and other items for the board review, and that staff reevaluate the contributing building criteria, specifically with regard to associated with events that have made significant contributions to the broad patterns of our history.
Could not have worded that better myself. One second, making notes. Okay, so the current motion on the floor is to continue the proposal no more than 90 days in order for the petitioner to provide the structural reports and photos that have been completed for the board's consideration and for staff to reevaluate the criteria as it relates to the criteria of relating to broad patterns of our history, correct? Broad patterns of our history.
I don't mind if I say something. We're happy to reevaluate the criteria, but I don't think that the onus should be on staff to do the research about that. I mean, the onus is usually on the applicant to do the research. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Thoughts?
Thoughts. If staff is evaluating a building, whether it should be contributing or not, that should be the staff's responsibility to do that research.
Do you have a rebuttal? Okay. Caitlin, do you have anything to add to that before we second this motion? No? Okay. I happen to agree with you. So that's the motion that's on the floor. With no amendment, do we have a second to that motion?
Rowan, second.
Okay. Okay. Ms. Gwynn, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
And Mr. Thompson?
Nay.
Okay.
If I can explain it, the second part of that.
If you wish to,
I will let you. Isn't the issue anymore, the evaluation, but that's why I voted nay.
Okay. Well, regardless, the petition has been continued for no more than 90 days. Okay. The last item on the regular agenda is the petition of Glenn Keys Architect 23-003204-COA 14-18 East Oglethorpe Avenue, Rehabilitation and Alterations.
All right. It's Caitlin Chamberlain again presenting for 14 and 18 East Oglethorpe Avenue. The applicant is requesting approval to rehabilitate the exterior of 14 East Oglethorpe Avenue and 18 East Oglethorpe Avenue and the installation of a new metal stair and elevator tower with new mechanical equipment on the roof. The rehabilitation work includes repair of all wood elements, restoration and replacement of windows and doors, repair and recoating of roof, replacement of non-historic windows, and removal of elastomeric coating from the historic stucco and repainting. So for some context, then the surrounding area, 14 East Oglethorpe Avenue was built circa 1838, and 18 East Oglethorpe Avenue was built in 1844. Both are currently part of the Ballastone Inn and are contributing resources within the National Historic Landmark District and the local Savannah Downtown Historic District. The structures are situated on East Oglethorpe between Drayton and Bull Streets. The buildings are between the Juliet Gordon Lowe Birthplace to the west and a one-story mid-century modern building to the east that is home to Seabolt Real Estate. Both addresses have their rear elevations completely visible from East York Lane, and 14 East Oglethorpe Avenue has an enclosed elevator tower at the rear. Just kind of show some of those site photos. East Oglethorpe Avenue was renovated and enlarged in 1883. This is the main building of the Ballastone Inn. The property is first seen on the 1884 Sanborn map as a three-story masonry dwelling with a basement. There are wood frame porches on the east, west, and rear elevations with a wood walkway at the rear that connected to a two-story masonry carriage house. A smaller one-story masonry outbuilding also existed at the west corner of the lot adjacent to the carriage house. Changes to the property are not seen until the 1898 Sanborn map, where the rear porch was enclosed, side porch was removed, and the front west side was extended with a bay window added. This can still be seen today. By 1916, it was functioning as an apartment building, which is also noted on the 1953 and 1973 Sanborn maps. No major structural changes are seen on the maps during this time, but the outbuildings were demolished by 1973. 18 East Oglethorpe Avenue currently functions as the Bellastone Inn Annex and was renovated in 1966. The building first also appears on the 1884 Sanborn map, and there's also a one-story outbuilding at the rear west corner lot. But on the 1888 Sanborn map, a one-story masonry outbuilding appears to have taken the place of the former wood frame one. There are no structural changes to the building until 1916. There was a store in the basement level and rooming on the upper levels, addition of a stoop to the west corner of the front elevation. By 1973, the rear masonry addition had been removed, and the front stoop is no longer noted. So an overview of the existing elevations. Just go over those quickly. So this is the front. And we have west elevation, rear, where the project in question is, and the east. For proposed, let's see, there are 6/6 non-historic windows in the building that the applicant is proposing based on a historic photograph to make into 2/2 double hung wood frame windows throughout. So you can see that on other elevations as well. And then we're seeing the rear elevation with the stairs proposed and the proposed elevator tower. Overall, staff found the majority of the work is visually compatible and meets the standard. An element of the rehabilitation project is to remove a modern stucco finish at 14 East Oglethorpe and to recoat with a more appropriate stucco. Staff is requesting product information to ensure that a true stucco is used as per the ordinance and a test patch and area of the proposed removed modern coating proceeding with prior to full removal. The applicant is proposing to replace the modern 6/6 windows. There are some new doors proposed as well. And although information was provided about the materials, staff is requesting window and door schedules and specific product information. There's also currently non-historic nailed-on shutters on 18 East Oglethorpe proposed to be replaced with operable wood louvered shutters. This meets the standards, but staff is requesting that the applicant provide information about the type of wood to be used. In the staff recommendation, it is noted that the applicant consider options that may include incorporating the existing historic door into the design rather than sealing it off and cutting a new opening into the ground level of 18 East Oglethorpe. Staff notes that the applicant has since discussed this with staff prior to the report being completed. That the elevation is not part of the historic building, but they will discuss in their presentation. With reference to the Secretary of the Interior Standards 9 and 10 for new additions to not damage the historic building and to be reversible, staff finds that the proposed addition of rear stairs and separate elevator tower is designed in a way that ensures the new work will not be mistaken as part of the historic building, that it could be removed without destroying the building. And while the top of the elevator tower is slightly taller than that lower, let's get down there, the lower roof slope, it is still below the roof pitch of the main house and also the neighboring building. Staff is recommending that the stairs for the elevator tower are connected in a way that would not cause major damage to the historic building if removed. So for staff recommendations is to approve the request for the rehabilitation of historic features at 14 East Oglethorpe Avenue and 18 East Oglethorpe Avenue and the construction of an unattached elevator tower at the rear of the property of 18 East Oglethorpe Avenue with the following conditions for staff review and approval prior to starting the project because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, confirm that the addition of the stairs and elevator tower would remain within the 75% maximum lot coverage zone for DN properties. Two, consider options that may include incorporating the existing historic door into the design rather than sealing off and cutting a new opening into the ground level of 18 East Oglethorpe Avenue. Three, ensure that the rear stairs on 18 East Oglethorpe Avenue are attached in a way that would not cause major damage to the building if removed, or provide any information on color changes for painting if it differs from the existing. Five, provide information about the stucco finish for 14 East Oglethorpe Street, and to ensure that the generalist means possible is used for removing the elastomeric coating, including a test patch in an inconspicuous area. Provide a window and door schedule and specific product information, including how existing openings may be altered. Provide information regarding the wood type for the replacement shutters, and provide specific details about the exterior lighting. Thanks, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Does anybody have any questions for staff? I know we talked about this one a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
My name is Glenn Keyes. I'm the architect for the project. We had a chance to review all these items with Caitlin yesterday. We agree with all of those. We do want to talk about the rear door. As you can see, Caitlin, do they have this image? Do they have that standpoint image? Is that on their screens?
Mm-hmm.
So if you can see on the Sanborn images and the photographs at the top from that Historic American Building Survey, there's been a lot of changes to that rear elevation, including two additions that were subsequently removed. Interestingly, there used to be a three-story addition on the side. So the building has had a lot of changes over time. That rear, including the change in size for all the windows, the ones currently existing are smaller than the ones that show up on the historic photographs. So that said, the historic fabric on that rear elevation has been compromised numerous times, and we want to try to make it look as compatible as possible to how it was originally. We would ask that we could move the door, and we're happy to leave the existing door in place and just cut a new opening that would be stacked underneath the windows above to make a visual connection. But there's just been a lot of loss of historic fabric on that rear elevation, and so we feel it'd be acceptable to cut a new opening and make it aligned with the windows above. With the construction of the stair and the elevator tower, honestly, those will not be visible from the alleyway, or if so, minimally visible. So it will not have a large impact either way. Thank you very much.
Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner? I'm assuming that you're adding the stair and the elevator to meet egress requirements.
That's correct. Egress and ADA requirements.
Okay. Anybody have anything else? Okay. Thank you, sir. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment?
Hello, my name is Andrew Jones, chairman of the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition, a 501c3 organization dedicated to the preservation of the downtown National Historic Landmark District. Here is a mock-up I did of what this proposal actually is. Please take a look at this. The addition proposed to this Greek Revival building is inappropriate. It looks more like a 1970s brutalist-style imposter in the middle of a 19th century context. It's not visually compatible with the contributing buildings to which it relates. Diagonally across Oglethorpe are stately federal townhouses. The next block to the west features the 18th century home of General McIntosh, which was the former Eppinger's Tavern, which is where the Sons of Liberty met during the Revolution. To the west is the Juliet Gordon Lowe home by William Jay. This area is one of Savannah's most historic locations. Please look carefully at this proposal. Where else in the and this is a view from Drayton Street. not even the lane. This is just walking down Drayton Street, what you will see. Where else in the historic district do you see a suspended roof? You see that huge roof at the top just floating in midair? Where else in the historic district would you see a roof like that from below, supported by two freestanding four-story metal poles? It just has nothing to do with the district. How can this be justified under the ordinance, especially in such a historic location and so extremely visible from a street? Okay. The building envelope is visible from Drayton Street. It's consistent, historical, and constitutes a fine example of Savannah's Greek Revival. And I beg to differ with the applicant. Look at the windows. Look at the rear windows, how they match the windows on the side. And by the way, in an 1838 building, the windows would be 6/6, not 2/2. So that's that would have been a later alteration. Originally, they would have been in a style like this, even if these are proportioned. But what's significant is this is the view you see currently of the building from the street. And the fact that its use has changed is not a reason to make it ugly. The owners can put the elevator inside. And if they're unwilling to do so, then they have a duty to sell this building to someone else who will be a better steward. And the irony can't be ignored. This is a hotel bringing tourists to Savannah to see its beautiful historical district, which this proposal is altering for the worse. So back to the mock-up. Actually, let me go to what the architect actually isn't hiding from you what he's proposing. You can see this Drayton Street elevation here on the lower left. He shows the building on Drayton Street, and you can see how much of this horrible building or addition is completely visible from the street. And now, it seems as though, as we saw in the other proposal, you should require mock-ups, 3D mock-ups of what these look like. That was required, for example, in New York when I was on the Landmarks Committee for Greenwich Village and Soho. You had to produce a 3D mock-up like this. Incremental change matters. A door here, a window there, a fire escape. Eventually, the historic fabric becomes so altered and debased that it ceases to be historic or worthy of preservation. Please deny this proposal. I was absolutely shocked that this even had gotten to this stage. I have spoken with Steve Edwards, who's the preservation liaison from the Downtown Neighborhood Association, and the DNA concurs that this proposal should be denied for the reasons stated in this proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, Ryan Jarles with Historic Savannah Foundation again. I just wanted to start with the window surrounds on that rear facade as well as the side of the rear addition. Those window surrounds were added, I believe. The petitioner would be able to answer that, but I think it was like the 80s. I've seen photographs where those window surrounds did not exist. They weren't there. I did want to state our architectural review committee met this past Monday. A big hang-up that our ARC had about this elevator shaft was its facades being a stucco. When Preservation Brief 32 states, and that Preservation Brief 32 is accessibility for historic structures, that brief in no certain terms states that the exterior of those additions for elevator shafts should be of the same material as the historic building. So our ARC stated possibly making it a wood siding or a siding similar to wood siding with potentially enclosed windows. I'll put that in quotations where you like do shutters, where it looks like windows are there. They also stated another possible issue they had was the openness of this stairwell and the visibility of the stairwell. One option they presented for that was potentially creating what looks like rear porches, again, utilizing shuttered walls. We see that a lot on rear additions throughout the historic district. Our ARC is not against elevator shafts. We understand accessibility is a need in historic buildings, and they would prefer it be on the exterior than damaging the existing interiors of the building. Thank you. And we also would state, instead of denying a project like this, we would prefer to see something like this continue to allow for those changes to be thought through. Thank you.
Is there any other public comments virtually? Okay. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Yes, I'm a preservation architect in Charleston and have been in practice for 36 years. And our goal is always to have as light a touch on a historic building as possible. And so buildings, we could have enclosed this and made it all a big addition on the back, but the mass of that would, I think, would have been much more intrusive than something that's light and open like a stair. As far as the elevator shaft, you know, we're not opposed to changing the material. It does butt up to the elevator shaft at the ballast stone, so there's a mass right there that it kind of blends with and becomes less of an object as it blends with the mass of the ballast stone next door. Mm-hmm. But as I say, the secretary standards do require that you try to distinguish new additions from historic buildings, and I think staff mentioned that in their comments. So we're trying to find a suitable solution that has as light a touch as possible on these historic buildings, but gets the job done of providing access for the buildings, both buildings, through ADA access. As Mr. Durrell said, we also have to be concerned about the interiors of these buildings. They're fine historic interiors, and elevators inside would greatly damage the historic fabric of that interior.
I have a question for you, and I think Mr. Poole does as well. So considering you're adding another elevator that's attached to the elevator that currently exists, is that necessary?
It's two different buildings.
So they're not going to be connected at all?
Not connected.
Okay.
They're not now, and they won't be because they're different floor levels. So it's...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Totally different.
Mr. Poole, he did? Okay, yeah, we had the same one. Okay, thank you. At this time, we will now enter into board discussion, and no further public comment will be accepted. Ms. Gwen, I'll start with you.
I think for me, there's a couple of outstanding questions. I think it's hard for me to determine the height of that addition as it relates to the elevator shaft next door. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to go off of Mr. Jones's sketch where it looks like it's much taller. I would like to have a little bit more information about that, because I think that is concerning. And I have a little bit, it gives me a little anxiety to try to approve something with this many conditions, mm-hmm. Without having clear answers. And given the location of the building, I think that we should probably slow down and take a little bit more time. So my preference would be to continue this.
Mr. Higgins.
Totally agree with what was just said. When we run into things like this, where we have ADA issues, and we have to bring a building's functionality into the modern era, it's oftentimes difficult to do. I think Ryan from HSF made some very good points. Mr. Jones had some interesting points. So I agree. I think we need to not have this many conditions.
Great.
Perhaps have some better views or even mock-ups of this structure so we can better see it. So yes, I would support a continuance.
Mr. Hull.
Unfortunately pile on to the previous comments, one of the things that I think has come up before is you don't want to add too much, but at the same time, a elevator shaft, which is ADA requirement, plus stairs, both of those hanging out there at the back of the building, which at least from the photographs can be seen from the road, it would seem to me to be you wrap those up. Of course, we haven't seen if we did the if a mock-up was prepared, if you had like examples of how it would look either way. That would give us a little bit more idea of which one would be the most obvious to somebody driving down the street.
Ms. Roman.
Yeah, I think this many conditions is a little alarming. And I agree with presenting several mock-ups of the elevator shaft and the stairs. I did like the idea of trying to make them feel more like there's, you know, a back porch kind of looking with the shutters. Could be beautiful. Instead of just having, you know, metal stairs hanging off the back of such a beautiful building.
I agree. I think that would be more visually compatible.
Yeah. And I liked the idea of, you know, maybe doing the punch out or faux kind of windows on the elevator shaft. I think would be more aesthetically pleasing, but that's it.
Mr. Thompson.
Well, I agree with most of the comments I've heard. The visual on those stairs are much worse than the current visual on stairs.
Yes.
And I forgot who mentioned the idea of framing that in so it looks like an extension or addition to the house itself versus open stairs. I can see why they wanted to do it that way. So there's a elevator platform outside the existing house. Mm-hmm. So minimal disruption to the inside with the door being there to go in and out. So I think I duplicated most of the comments that have already been heard.
Okay, we'll go around a second time. Ms. Gwen?
Nothing further.
Mr. Higgins?
Just a short one that this is not the first time that something like this has come up, but definitely will not be the last time.
Yes.
So we need to really look at precedents that we're setting.
Agreed. Mr. Poole?
No further.
Ms. Brown?
No further questions.
And Mr. Thompson?
Just that the adjacent building, it's pretty clear that you know it's an elevator shaft that's enclosed completely there. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing that I would add to is the fact that the elevator shaft is stucco doesn't concern me as much, only because I think the fact that it butts up to the ballastone elevator shaft. So I feel like it would look more like just one larger mass versus if you did one in say like a wood or something and then or even added punched openings versus where the one that currently exists doesn't have those features. So it would be obvious that it's different versus like one solid element. That would be. And then I also agree with Mr. Jarl's suggestion from ARC that making the stairs maybe look more like a rear porch would be more like a simplified, obviously rear porch would be more visually compatible and much more visually compatible from Drayton than just the open, stark, modern of the staircase that's being presented. So with that, we will now entertain a motion.
This is Gwen.
Chair.
Go ahead.
Okay,
Mr. Hull, you got it.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review continue the petition 23003204 COA at 14 East Oglethorpe Avenue to enable for a period not to exceed 90 days to allow the petitioner to work with staff to reduce the number of conditions on the current staff report and to provide alternative mock-ups for the rear proposed changes to the building.
Okay. So the current motion, sorry, lost my train of thought. The current motion on the floor is to continue the petition not to exceed 90 days to allow the petitioner to work on the conditions as specified in the staff report and to also provide alternative designs and mock-ups. Do we have a second?
Gwen, second.
Okay. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
And Ms. Gwen?
Aye.
Okay. With that, the motion has been continued. Okay. Next is the approved staff reviews. A list of staff reviews has been attached to the agenda, and I will read through all of those, and then we will vote for acknowledgement. The petition of alternative roofing solutions 23-00305-COA. 417 East Bay Street, replace steel deck roof. The petition of Robert Hendrian, 23-003160-COA, 112 West Wahlberg Street, in-kind siding repair and replacement. The petition of Jan Polinski, 23-002919-COA, 304 East State Street, replace aluminum siding with wood lath and paint white. The petition of Metalcrafts, 23-002987-COA, 228 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, mechanical screening and roof replacement. The petition of Ethos Preservation, 23-002875-COA, 705 Barnard Street, roof and stucco repairs. The petition of Jan Polinski, 23-002916-COA, 304 East State Street, return non-historic window opening to door opening. The petition of Roof Crafters, 23-002872-COA, 215 West Liberty Street, replace white TPO roof in kind. The petition of Fast Signs, 23-001250-COA, 317 East Liberty Street, relocate existing pole sign from 120 East Liberty to tree lawn of 317 East Liberty. And lastly, the petition of Fast Signs, 23-002701-COA, 1415 Abercorn Street, install two non-illuminated signs. All in favor of voting acknowledgement, please. Yes.
I'm sorry, we didn't hear
you. He asked if 1415 Abercorn Street is out of our district, and it might be.
Yeah, that's right by our Abercorn Street house. So
yeah, that's Victorian. Victorian.
Okay. Okay, so let's remove. We're going to remove 25. Vote in acknowledgement. Everybody, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you for that catch. I kind of thought that when I read it. I was like, that seems like it's a little far. Okay, so next is obviously the reports are attached to the agenda for work performed without a certificate of appropriateness. So work that was performed without, inconsistent with, or which exceeds the scope of an issued COA. Attached are also reports regarding items that were deferred to staff for this meeting. Notices, proclamations, and acknowledgements, there's stamped drawings attached, and the report on inspections completed by staff for this meeting. There is nothing under other business unless somebody has something that they would like to add. No? Nothing to bring up? Okay. Then the next HDBR pre-meeting will be Wednesday, August 9th, 2023, here in this room at noon, and then the regular meeting will start at 1 o'clock. Meeting adjourned.